from Midori House here in London. This is a very special edition of The Stack. We're coming to you live from Studio One. I'm Tyler Brûlé. We're getting your weekend started with a pile of Saturday newspapers, plus a dash of eye-catching new magazines thrown into the mix as well. And here to help me, we have got a couple of people to look at the front pages. Andrew Tuck, who's not done enough time around the microphone this week, our editor, of course, is here, alongside a former colleague of his as well, The Independent on Sundays, former editor Lisa Markwell, and of course, Steve Watson, very, very regular voice here on the from Stack Magazines, and of course, regular voice here on The Stack as well. That's all on today's program, 30 minutes of print industry analysis, live from Studio One. Well, good morning, everybody. Very nice to see a very, very full studio here on a Saturday. Andrew at the far end of the table, adjusting his microphone, limbering up. Lisa Markwell here.
I'm ready.
You're ready to go. As I was saying in the intro, Andrew, this has probably been the most hours logged in a studio in the week, probably since we launched five years ago. I'll turn over to you to maybe set the tone. You've got The Guardian in front of you, but maybe you just want to reflect a little bit on what has been a rather curious, upsetting, annoying week, not just in London, but also Midori House.
Yeah, so we have been in the studio a lot analysing the week as it's gone. And I think, you know, maybe like much of the country, well, certainly our audience, the majority of our audience around the world and here in the UK, who were definitely for Remain. And, you know, we don't need to be worried about that. We're not an impartial service. We know we want to talk to our audience. And I think there's been in the studio a rising sense of anger as the week has gone on, about what has happened, and a sense that something now needs to happen. You know, everyone's frustrated and disappointed, but what do you do next? And that is the thing that I hope to see. But it's interesting looking at the front pages today, and we don't want to go into too much Brexit, but it's the anniversary, 100-year anniversary of the Somme, and watching both TV and looking at print today, this is why, in the end, institutions like the EU came about, because of war, because of the desire for peace. And it was stark yesterday seeing the Queen, seeing Hollande, seeing, you know, all of these people gathered and in unity, and a sense that we don't want to be quite part of that project anymore. And it made me actually very sad watching the scenes on TV.
Lisa, you've, I'm sure, also been doing some time around microphones and phone lines, etc. This week. I guess just reflections, and also where we've ended up on a Saturday morning, really 1 week on, where papers have really had time to reflect. And it's interesting, and we've been talking about countries, certainly at least the continent, certainly moving on. El País, probably one of the most respected papers on the continent. Brexit, UK is not even on the front page. More of a focus on Austria's presidential election, and doesn't even get a look in really by pages three.
It's interesting, isn't it, that in this country we are completely and utterly obsessed by the personalities of this political situation, which I find rather disheartening, actually, because it's very important, of course, who leads our major political parties, and that is in such a state of flux that we haven't seen, I think, ever, that both are simultaneously facing leadership crises. But this is much bigger than that. Of course it is. This is about the future of our place in the world. And so to see the British papers, I suppose it's inevitable, but it's so much focus on, you know, whether Theresa May's diabetes may be a problem, or whether, you know, Michael Gove can be trusted, and how long Jeremy Corbyn can sort of dig his heels in. You know, these figures will be here for a few years, but not forever. So the sort of the narrative really, I think, is focused in the wrong place. But just one more point I would say, this time last week I was indeed broadcasting very early in the morning about the fallout. And I think for political journalists, this has been a week that I don't think anybody's slept. Mm. And today feels like everyone's daring to dream that they might be able to have a weekend and have a breather.
The sun's out in London this morning.
Exactly. The sun's out. Well, they're probably all down, asleep with the shutters down, but hoping to actually be able to regroup. And the politicians themselves need to sleep and rest. And I think, joking apart, really everybody needs to just catch their breath and figure out what are we going to do next.
So you've at least talked about the narrative right now. Do you think there's maybe a few too many news consultants? I mean, everyone's sort of been talking about the people, you know, in the background behind Labour and the Conservatives. But this move to personality really feels like all the things we criticize U.S. media for as well. You know, particularly, you know, and now, you know, we have, of course, you know, two leadership races ahead of us right now, and this focus on really not what's the key issue confronting everyone at the moment.
Well, so I read my Quartz briefing this morning, and they had a very cutting lead about how in the space of a week the UK has managed to knock the US off its pedestal as the most ridiculous political system. And then, you know, I think that everyone's just been left completely baffled by the whole thing. And I think that, you know, as you kind of, you have your head down during the week working, and you see like little updates coming through, and, you know, Boris is going to, then he's not going to, and then has he been secretly meeting with Theresa May to figure something out for 2020? And that, I just think that it's so corrosive and destructive. Mm. And at the heart of all this, up where I'm from in East Yorkshire, people there voted 2-1 to leave. They're all still absolutely certain that they want to leave. You know, this rot that set in 20 years ago, whatever it was, is still there. We still have that problem. I think it's really sad.
I want to come back to you in a moment and talk about the impact on you being a small business person, but also operating in the wider world. Both opportunities and what you see as challenges. But Andrew, you've got The Guardian there. And it just was interesting to see what happened this week as well. And of course, there's been a slight shift on the front pages. We have the Somme, of course, memorials. But it was depressing to also see how all of these live feeds for Brexit, you know, they just became the character race. And then they really became sort of leadership blogs more than anything else. And I think all of the real issues that we're talking about, how is this impacting the daily lives of all kinds of people who are shuttling through these studios and many others, was completely sidelined.
I think Lisa's right, first of all, about this. You know, what's happened over the last week has been exhausting maybe for politicians and for the press, but it's been exhausting for the public as well. Last night I really felt that people were just worn out by the week and what has happened. But I think also for papers like The Guardian, who feel a little bit wrong-footed in lots of different ways, you know, by the dismantling of the Labour Party, by the vote not going their way, it's taken them a little while to regroup about what they think. And I think even now, when I look at the newspapers, no one's saying, actually, we believe now that we should do one thing or another. They're full of hope and possibilities and maybe this could happen and worries and frets. But nobody's really coming on the front foot and saying, this is what now needs to happen. This is the way out of this mess. And for readers, I think there's going to be a stage where the papers become a little bit exhausting as well, because it's great to know what's going on and you feel caught up in this drama. But in the end, unless there is some kind of way out of this mess, hinted at by even your paper, who may not in the end get their way, but you want something to follow, you want something to kind of pull you out of this.
Lisa, I was talking to Ruthie Rogers of the River Cafe. We've got a big interview with her coming up on Monocle 24. And as soon as we sat down yesterday, she said, did we do enough? And for people who aren't familiar with the River Cafe in London, you know, many editors, many people in charge of newsrooms are shuttling through that restaurant, if not during the week, certainly on the weekend. And she just, you know, wanted to sort of hammer home this point. As an entrepreneur, someone who has, of course, a leadership position running an interesting business in London, but also in terms of her peer group. And do you think when you look around at the editors that you were working with on Fleet Street, yeah, did the papers do enough? Did they set it up enough? Or already, as much as sort of, you know, criticizing what happened with, just this focus on leadership and personality right now, many opportunities were missed?
I think that print news actually does have a case to answer, actually, first and foremost, and I would say this, wouldn't I? I think it was a terrible shame that The Independent wasn't there on the newsstands as a counterbalance to what was overwhelmingly in favour of leave. It was a very sort of right-wing drive. There were also machinations between competing newspapers within their own news groups. I'm thinking of the Daily Mail and the Mail on Sunday. All of these things were completely distracting from what we needed, which was the cold, hard facts. I don't have much truck with people saying, oh, we wouldn't have voted this way if we had had all the facts. Well, the facts were there, and actually the newspapers did a pretty decent job of it, but it wasn't terribly balanced, and I think that's a great shame. But I think this is somewhere where you want the commentators, probably only once a week, but, you know, The Times, for instance, I think is always very good at this, for sort of actually explaining. And last Saturday, Janice Turner in The Times just said, everyone it's not realised who the people are who are voting Leave. These are the people who were completely disappointed to have been ignored and left behind, and it's not just a bunch of racists. A very nuanced argument, and I think that helps the rest of us to understand where we are. So there is a case for it, but yes, there could have been more facts.
Mm. Andrew, but also aside from facts, also just perhaps a narrative as well, which was... which we've been talking about certainly in our pages and on air, but also the good things. And you know, many have said also, you know, where was the voice of Brussels and out of other capitals in Europe? But perhaps a tone of optimism as well. And I'm wondering if you feel that that was, you know, whether it was 4 weeks ago or whether it was 7 days before.
That was definitely missing, I would say. The case for Europe was missing from all of the press.
I agree with Lisa. I think first of all, the notion of immigration being good for us, nobody almost dared say it, and nobody could quite explain it in a way that was palatable for a wider audience. Even the papers on the left were kind of hedging their bets on the topic because they knew it was sensitive. In areas outside of London, they knew that in some of their northern areas, it wasn't going down well. So they kind of tempered what they had to say. We met a very senior Czech diplomat this week who came to see us, and he said, he said the tragedy was that he was part of the negotiation team when went for accession of the then Czechoslovakia into the EU. And Britain gave a helping hand, helped the Czechs in, and it pulled them away from the sphere of the Soviets. It kind of ensured that all of these Eastern countries were suddenly democracies, that they were capitalist democracies, they thrived. And we gave some money for that project and we continue to do that. But it ensured a whole generation of people in the East suddenly had opportunities. And that's the bit that we didn't manage to explain in our papers, the good, the connections, standing shoulder to shoulder people, being friends, all of that. And I think, oddly, it's only now is going that it really has sunk in.
Lisa, go ahead first, sorry.
I was going to just say on that point, I was in Latvia earlier this year at an event and speaking to some of the people there who are obviously everyone's talking about Brexit. And there's a guy I was talking to who just said, if you lived as close to Russia as we do, you would have a completely different perspective on this, because Mr. Putin wants to see that happen. He wants to see Britain leave the EU because he knows what that means. So that, people over here, when we march for rights, when we try to, move towards a more liberal democracy, we do so under the banner of the EU. And that is absolutely something that I just hadn't heard over here.
Mm. Lisa?
Well, I was going to actually draw in a slightly different direction, which is referring back to your interview, which I can't wait to hear, with Ruthie Rogers, who I'm a big fan of. And the case for Europe, I know, is very, very important to all of the people in the hospitality trade. And when we come on to talk about particular titles, I've just done a piece for something called The London Essays about London's booming restaurant scene. But I know that so many people in that world, and I'm sure the River Cafe is included in that, who are really worried about the post-EU landscape for them in terms of their customers, in terms of their staff. It's a real issue. And I think that's something that we might sort of say, oh, well, that's a very sort of, metropolitan anxiety, but that's something that goes all across the country.
Yeah, I think here is a woman who is, of course, created an incredible business, and I want people to tune in to listen to the interview as well, not give it all away, but she said, when she looked at her staff list, she said, right down the line, 50% of her staff are, if they're not from the EU, but they're from elsewhere around the world, absolutely. And then just very the basic mechanics of talking about three deliveries that come from the Milan markets every week. She's three trucks coming every week. And what does that mean? And what does that, of course, we talk about the spill-on effect in Europe moving on, but also what does it mean to these people who she's had relationships, it's amazing, as suppliers for three decades. Anyway, it's quite, and yes, and I'm sure a lot of people argue with saying, well, someone like Ruthie Rogers, will just be fine. But I mean, she really worries about what that means for her staff. See, I just wanted to, just bring it back to someone who's running a business, of a scale like yours. What do you look at now? But I guess also the conversation up in Yorkshire, maybe not that you're sort of marching around wanting to engage, but trying to sort of, reason the point about how you have to operate in a broader world.
Yeah, so I was up in Hull on Friday and last weekend. And it was genuinely very uncomfortable. It was having conversations with family and stuff, people who I know voted out and were delighted that we'd left. And I don't think I did a very good job of persuading them of my side of things, because for them, the goal had been achieved. I mean, in terms of running a small business. I was speaking to Alison Branch, who's the MD of Park Communications, earlier this week, so a printer based in London. And she was saying they're just waiting now for all the European paper suppliers to put the prices up, because it's not like European paper suppliers do us tons of favours anyway. But so actually that means that for her, speaking to a small independent publisher, actually the cost of your magazine that you've been printing for a couple of years now is maybe 15-20% higher. Mm. That means that when I come to buy the copies from them, we're already tight. It's going to eat into that, and it's a big problem, I think.
We're going to go to a break in a moment, but Andrew, just before we do that, that's certainly been a discussion that we've been having here all week. We'll be thinking about, we're already one side thinking about our printers down in Cornwall, that supply chain, what that means. As we know very quickly, if things don't go in the right way, where printers in this country are already under the cosh every single day, you have to make a lot of contingency plans.
And also just jumping in on this point about the smaller companies, I think it's fascinating. If you were two kids who had met at, say, fashion school here, and you want to do your own magazine, and one of you is French, one of you is English, where are you going to now run that magazine? You're going to think, okay, let's start it up in the East End. You're going to think, actually, why don't we take a chance and go and do it in Amsterdam? Because we'll be a little bit, we know that they'll kind of want us. Because if there's going to be some point scheme for who can come into this country, that is going to get rid of all of the good people who come here with nothing but fight their way up. Mm. And that suddenly those people, super mobile, super talented, and they will be gone. And that is the bit that, I don't think any of the politicians can get their heads around, because they don't see it, they don't understand it, and they don't feel it.
Mm. And I heard that one of our local representatives here the other day, which this is just extraordinary, again, voted to leave. And you just think, how can someone walk around this neighborhood every day with their petite little dog and see and hear the accents of the voices and all of this and think that that was going to be a wonderful idea? I think we all know who we're talking about, at least in this room anyway. You're listening to The Stack here on Monocle 24 with me, Tyler Brûlé, Andrew Tuckley, Sam Arkwell, and Steve Watson. We're going away for a very short break. We're going to get on with some magazines right after this.
In search of a story of urban transformation, Monocle Films explored London's King's Cross, once a seedy district to be avoided, now a destination neighbourhood.
To us, the master plan is the public realm. That's what confers the value. It's creating the arteries of the city for people and goods and trade and value to flow. And then the buildings need to respond to that public realm and enhance it. And that's the test to us for any good building.
Regeneration on a human scale. Monocle's latest film on transformation in King's Cross. Now playing in the film section at monocle.com.
Welcome back to The Stack here on Monocle 24 with me, Tyler Brûlé, our editor, Andrew Tuck, Lisa Markwell, also Steve Watson of Stack Magazines. I should probably say there's one title which has been attracting everyone's attention here in studio. It's got a green cover, but it's amazing. Yeah, obviously, lots of magazines try to upsell us with various tip-ons on the front cover. This one's got a scouring pad on it. Tell us a little bit about it, Steve.
So this is The Ordinary. It's published out of Amsterdam. This is issue 2, and as you say, it has a scouring pad cover mount. Issue 1 was plastic cutlery. And the idea is that each issue they take an ordinary object and commission a bunch of artists to create art based around that object. And then for the entire issue is just devoted to these great big double spread photographs of that art. I brought it in because I think, do you know what? We need a little bit of light relief. We need a bit
of fun. Things need a scrub down in general as well.
Things need a scrub down, exactly. I think this for me gets to the heart of what a lot of independent magazines do, which is, whereas if you see the mainstream as being kind of all about kind of celebrity and glamour and like selling you an extraordinary lifestyle, independent magazines for me are all about selling you an ordinary lifestyle, or at least even if you look at like The Gentlewoman, Selma Mag, that does have celebrity, they focus on the kind of the human side of these characters. And I think that this is kind of a, I mean, it's a puckish kind of cheeky experiment, but I think that it's doing something a bit clever as well.
What would be the newsstand cover price for that?
That is a good question.
Only because I'm looking at it, it's very...
it's got no words in it.
It's got no words.
It ain't got no words.
But yeah, there's some expense. There's obviously some very expensive installation that I always come back to. How do you finance something like that? Is it 100 euros or is it a tenner?
There is no cover price, okay. And I'm ashamed to say, because I'm in my ivory tower, it just lands on my desk and I get to enjoy it.
Also those wasteful ministers in some EU cultural tower shelling up tens of thousands probably to make that happen. And God bless them for it. Lisa, I see the new Statesman. We should probably pick up, but you also talked about the Lund Essays as well,
there are two sides to my magazine consumption at the moment. I mean, since I left editing a newspaper, it's fascinating, as Steve says, you know, when you're in a position, the lucky position of being in publishing, of course, you do get everything arrive on your desk. And my husband despairs of the piles of magazines and newspapers that would come through the door. Since I've taken a sort of step out of that, and I'm now reading for pleasure and for actually consumption rather than skimming the front pages every day, everything's looking a little bit different. And I want to sort of give a positive shout out to the weekly news titles, because although, I mean, the New Statesman we see here with a brilliant cover by one of my favourite ever artists, Andre Carrillo, who we used to collaborate with at the Indie on Sunday, brilliant picture of Boris. Well, that's, of course, already out of date. And so you've also got, you know, The Spectator, The Economist, The Week, Private Eye. These titles, although they cannot be right at the sort of cutting edge of our news cycle, they really provide such a brilliant service, I think, because for us who are outside the bubble and just thinking, what the hell is going on, or a little bit more meat on the bones of the issues, you know, it's really important that those magazines exist, and also they're thriving. I mean, you know, we all know that newsprint is down, but these magazines are thriving, and I think that's brilliant. But sort of, you know, 90 degrees, I love to read about food and drink, and I wanted to mention particularly Noble Rot, which I adore, is the title. Absolutely brilliant on everything to do with wine and beyond. And their new issue, Winos with Attitude, which is, I think, probably a political party that we should form and get behind.
Don't all winos have attitude? It comes with the territory.
I know, I do. But the focus is all about Italian wines and volcanic wines. And, you know, with all the EU uncertainty, I just think, you know, that is just so cool. Celebrating one of the greatest things to come out of the EU, which is Italian wine.
Absolutely. Andrew, do you think that as we've seen the landscape change, certainly lines being drawn, is there room, if you had, you know, if someone gave you a couple of million euros right now, do you think there's room to do a new type of title? So even when you look at, let's say, all of the classics in the weekly spectrum that Lisa's talked about here, and of course we talk about decline, but even though this was actually a very good week for newspaper sales, though, it was amazing. I know at Kiosk Cafe last week, we sold out of every newspaper. I'm not sure what, but I just saw like crazy numbers, like 300-400% jumps with newspaper sales, physical copies this week. But yeah, do you think that this change, Andrew, actually presents an opportunity that also there is a liberal story, there is a constituency who are looking from the other side of the channel here and vice versa, who maybe want to be bonded together a little bit more?
I think the division that we've seen here in the UK, this kind of this cleaving through our nation, we have to remember that on one side sits 16 million people who voted to remain in the EU and who are pleased about that project and want to be part of it. They want their kids to be able to go and work in Europe. They want the opportunities to travel without border restrictions. So I think for those people, they want to be united with other voices in Europe. Now, we know that maybe the EU will change, whether it uses English or whatever, but actually the language of business is going to remain English. And if there was a newspaper that spoke to that community...
Do you think that newspaper exists here at the moment?
Well, I guess that something like the FT or the Herald Trib connect some of that audience, or the New York Times, as it's now called it by its old title. But in a way, I don't know that they caught it in the right way. I think there is a younger generation of readers, for example, people who are this entrepreneurial class we talk about, this mobile class, that maybe aren't quite in the FT world sometimes. Mm. And I think there's a more dynamic audience that should be brought together around a single project.
Steve, you've got we've got time for maybe two more magazines.
Okay, so I think that it's worth talking about 212. So Turkey obviously has been in the news for one reason for the last few days. This is a magazine published out of Istanbul, which deliberately, so it begins with Istanbul is the city where East meets West.
And it is a rather large,
weighty
title.
It's enormous. Careful, it'll break your wrist if you hold it wrong.
Priced at 35 Turkish lira, 12 euros, 15 US dollars. And I also like the idea that it's quite audacious, I think, to call it 212, because when area codes mattered once upon a time, it brings you to New York.
Exactly.
Which is great.
It's also the area code of Istanbul
made.
So they from the beginning want to wrong foot you and kind of send you in maybe slightly the wrong direction. And it's all about presenting this totally unique view of the world, which is theirs, which is saying, let's look at the world from where we are. Let's bring the best of East and West. And that, for me, you know, there's a story in there about the only Syrian ever to go into space. He went into space with the Russians in the 80s. Mm. And he is now living as a refugee in Turkey. And so you get this, you know, the Syrian refugee in Turkey story, but being told in a completely different way that you just, or I certainly haven't seen done anywhere else.
Absolutely beautiful. I'm not sure if you've seen this, Lisa, but it's this is a recommendation. So if anyone is thinking about what they want to consume over the course of this weekend at 212, just give us maybe one more tip. That's absolutely a delight, that one.
Okay, so it's super, super quick then. We'll go for A Museum. This is one we sent out on Stack last month in June. And I just love the sense of fun that's in this magazine. They have a section in there which is toilet paper. You flip through and you find there's literally a tipped in piece of paper between two illustrated bum cheeks, which starts the toilet paper section, which is then toilet trivia. Kind of that, this is a magazine which is unashamedly made to be read in little kind of 10-minute bursts. Enjoy it, put it down, and that's it.
London-based which is great. We're probably going to have to leave it there. Maybe not as many titles. I can also just see very quickly, you've also got a copy of Victory. So if someone's running out of the newsstand as well. And there was one more as well.
Journal and a magazine called Nang. This is from Seoul. It's a magazine of Asian cinema. This is issue zero, but it's looking like it's going to be a very beautiful thing.
Excellent. Well, Steve Watson of Stack Magazine, it's great to see you. Lisa Markwell, former colleague of Andrew Tuck's, very regular voice, increasingly regular voice around the microphone. Very good to see you. Andrew, I'll see you upstairs. We've got a magazine, the next edition of The Escapist, to get out the door. Today's show was produced by Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Our studio manager was Antonio Fernandez, and also Ben Ryland, ably editing the entire thing. If you have any comments or queries, drop us a note to info@monocle.com. But for me, Tyler Brulé, it's goodbye. Of course, The Stack is back at the very same time next week. See you then.